Hello, and thank you for joining us on Dark FM Radio. We are currently
on the air.
The Dixie standards are coming thick and fast now. Here's the Bridge City Jazzmen's version of another favorite, Jada.
Hail you, ghouls and goblins out there. You've tuned into Dark FM Radio. As always, I'm your host, James Blackbone. If you've listened in before, then you know what we do. But if you're new to the show, first of all, welcome. Here at Dark FM Radio, we tell stories. And not just any stories. First-hand accounts of unexplainable and creepy experiences. Anonymous emails and letters from regular people who claim to have witnessed or experienced something from either the supernatural, maybe some sort of strange or dark encounter, or just an overall terrifying experience. Tonight we have a few spine-tingling stories that are bound to get under your skin. So, sit back, relax, turn out the lights, and join us.
This happened about 3 years ago. I'm a traveling salesman and I sell office equipment to large companies in bulk. I had a deal going down in Las Vegas, Nevada that I had to get signed, and at the time I was in Idaho, so I started to head south. I was cruising through the Nevada desert, just relaxing, listening to a podcast with the window down, and I heard a strange noise coming from underneath my car. At first, I really didn't think much of it, just kind of ignored it, but the sound grew louder and louder. Finally, I pulled over to the side of the road to take a look and see what was going on. I got out, circled around my car, and I noticed one of my tires was leaking air. It was really strange because it kind of just happened randomly. I didn't see any screws or anything sticking out of the tire. It just started losing air, and suddenly, within a few minutes, it was completely flat. Well, this was really frustrating, but I was out in the Nevada desert. It was kind of late, about 8:30, so the sun was just teetering on the horizon, so it wasn't very hot. I decided the best thing to do would just be to go ahead and change the tire. I opened up the trunk, and sure enough, the spare tire was in there. But my heart sank when I realized the jack was missing. The spot where the jack had normally been was empty, which was very strange because before I started the long drive, I did a quick check to make sure I had everything I needed, and that included the jack. The jack was in the trunk. But regardless, it wasn't there now, so not much I can do. I pulled out my phone and took a quick look at my service, and well, thank God I had one bar of service. Not much, but it was enough to get a phone call out. I got a hold of the local AAA, and they said that they'd be sending somebody out to either fix my tire or to give me a tow. I was still about 3 hours from Las Vegas, and they told me the soonest they could get somebody out would be about 2 to 3 hours, so That was kind of a bummer, but I figured, well, what else am I going to do? So I got back in my car, and I figured I'd just relax, I suppose. Nothing else to do. I'm out in the middle of nowhere. The sun started to go down, and as it got darker, I noticed up ahead there was a light. It was at first faint because it was kind of bright outside, but once 9:30 rolled around, the light got really bright. The sun had gone down, and I could see clearly up ahead there was a bright light. Well, I had a few hours to kill, so I thought, what the hell, I'm going to go take a look. Could be a gas station, I could get some water or something to eat. Well, I jumped out of the car, walked for about 10 minutes, and sure enough, there it was. Well, it wasn't a gas station, but it was a diner, just kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I thought it was kind of peculiar being way out here, but I wasn't going to complain. I walked in, and the bell rang as I opened the old rusty door. I was greeted with unusual stares from the 7 or so patrons, who quickly looked back down at their meal, coffee, or newspaper. I slowly made my way over to the counter, and there was a really pretty waitress right behind the counter, and she asked me, "What can I get you?" So I asked her if I could just get a coffee black. She told me, "No problem, I'll be right back." I sat there and kind of looked around. It was one of those old-fashioned diners, you know, from like the 60s and 70s. At least that's what it looked like. It was just really strange, but I didn't think anything of it. A minute later, the waitress came back with my coffee, and we made small talk for, you know, about 15 or 20 minutes, asked me where I was from, where I was headed. I asked her about herself and the diner. She was pretty vague on both of those things, especially the diner's history. I asked how long it's been here, and she really didn't give me a very good answer. She just said, "It's always been here," which is weird, but whatever. About a minute later, I got a phone call. It was AAA. The tow truck driver was about 20 minutes out, which was a nice surprise considering it was supposed to be another 2 hours. I went to take one more final sip of my coffee, but my elbow kind of slipped on the counter, causing me to spill the hot coffee all over the bottom of my shirt. And that hurt like a son of a bitch. But it is what it is. I went ahead and paid my tab, stood up, gave the waitress a nod, and slowly walked out of the restaurant. As I walked, I kind of noticed the eyes of the patrons were just kind of following me, which was creepy, but I didn't think anything of it. I had to get back to my car. So I walked out, took the 10-minute walk back to my car. As soon as I got there, 5 minutes later, sure enough, the tow truck shows up. The guy jumps out and he's got all his tools with him. He quickly fixes my tire in probably 5 minutes, would have taken me probably an hour, so I was glad to have him do it. And just as he was getting back in his truck, I said, "Hey, excuse me, how's the food at that diner right down the road here?" He stopped dead in his tracks, slowly turned back to me and said, "There's no diner out here." I kind of chuckled, thinking he was just trying to be funny, but he stared at me stone steady, not even a smirk. "Well," I said, "you know, just right down there." And I looked and I noticed the light that I'd seen before was gone. It was just pitch black, endless darkness. I looked back at the truck driver and he was already getting back in his truck. Didn't say another word, started his rig and just took off. I stood there, alone in the darkness, confused as hell. Anyway, I didn't know what to think, so I thought, I'm just going to jump in my car and go take a look. Sure enough, there was no restaurant. I pulled up where it had been, and it was just sagebrush, nothing. Not even a foundation of a restaurant that had used to be there. It was just emptiness, darkness, desert. I wasn't sure what to think. I was obviously pretty freaked out, thought maybe I was going crazy, but I don't know. I mean, maybe I was. That is, until I reached down and touched the bottom of my shirt, there was a still wet, cold coffee stain.
My name is David, and I'm a senior park ranger who recently retired after dedicating 20 years of service to one of the most beautiful pieces of land. It was the perfect job for me, hence why I stayed so long, and most days on the clock felt like a walk in the park, no pun intended. However, during my second to last year working in the park, I experienced what I believe was a ghost leading me to his body. I was driving around on a work ATV as dusk approached, ensuring tourists and hikers knew that the park was closing soon and informing any campers that it was time to return to their designated campsites. While doing this, I noticed some belongings left behind in the forest off trail. I drove the ATV into the woods, following the discarded items tossed like litter and collecting them. I picked up a sleeping bag, a wool hat, a book, and stuff of that sort, all of which were molded and seemingly left behind years ago. I thought it was strange no one had come and collected these trashed items sooner than remembered how vast the park was. It'd be easy to miss something like this. Once I managed the mess and was ready to return to the trail, the ATV wouldn't start. It had died entirely, which surprised me. It was less than a year old. I called for someone to pick me up, and my colleague said it would be an hour until they could reach me since I was so far off from the main cabin. I decided to make myself comfortable and leaned against a nearby oak. That's when I heard the voices shouting in the distance. It sounded like two men arguing, except one was extremely angry while the other communicated timidly. Amid the muffled sounds, a few things said came across as clear as day. "It wasn't yours to take," and "fuck you, it was mine," indicating that the argument had reached a boiling point between the two. I called out and asked if they were all right, but I didn't get a response. That one voice kept yelling at the other with increasing anger. Though I didn't think it was feasible, the yelling grew louder and more intense than before. I started to walk in their direction to try and ease the tension for safety and courtesy purposes, but as I took my first few steps, a gunshot fired. Then everything went silent. I immediately returned to the ATV and hid behind it, calling my colleague and informing them about the potential danger. The other rangers didn't arrive until dark, and though we tried to search for the two men, we were out of luck. I returned to that area the next day to speculate in the sunlight, and that's when I found the body. I scanned what I assumed was the place they were arguing at, the rocky terrain corner of the forest. Nobody usually wanders in this area, for it's not easy to walk on and there aren't any long-distance views like there are in the rest of the park, but I was confident that this is the area where I heard the voices come from. As I was starting to feel unlucky with my search, I stumbled across a bullet shell. It was too old to have been from what I had heard the previous day. However, hunting is prohibited in the park, so there shouldn't have been a bullet shell on the property. It encouraged me to search more extensively. About 20 feet from the bullet was a white object revealing itself from a crevice between two large rocks. It was thin, lanky, and sharp-looking. Having never seen anything like that before, I approached it. The closer I got, the more I realized the park I've been patrolling for so long isn't exactly what I thought it to be. It holds dark secrets. The white object was a skeletal foot. I shined a light into the dark crevice and found the rest of the body. The skeleton was wrapped in old, moldy, matted men's clothing. But that one foot that caught my attention was missing a boot. The autopsy reports declared that the man had died from a gunshot wound to the skull. They estimated his date of death to be 40 years before I found the remains. The park was then closed to the public for widespread investigation around the land. We didn't find any additional human remains or evidence of other deaths, which leads me to believe the skeleton I saw belonged to one of the men I heard arguing. It's really the only honest explanation that I can come up with.
As a young boy, I encountered the most blood-chilling thing my mind could have conjured. It took place in the bathroom of my parents' home during New Year's Eve, and though this encounter alone was challenging for me to wrap my head around, it grew stranger once I met my wife 16 years later. As I said, it took place during a holiday. There weren't many people at the house to celebrate, just my parents, younger sister, and myself. We baked cookies, played card games, and had a laid-back, family-oriented evening. As we sat around the television, waiting for the ball to drop, I spilled chocolate fondue on myself. My parents weren't frustrated by this mistake, but rushed me to wash off quickly so I could return in time for the countdown. I hopped in the shower to scrub the hardening chocolate from my body, and by the time I had put on fresh pajamas, I was ready to return. I heard my family counting down from 10. I ran to the bathroom door excitedly, but stopped at the sight of strange shoes standing in my way. I slowly shifted my eyes upward, growing more fearful as I observed the unexpected company. My family was in a living room, so it was immediately evident that whoever stood in the bathroom with me was an intruder, and the intruder didn't look exactly human. It was a man wearing shiny black shoes with pointed toes, loose black dress pants, and an oversized black fur coat. His skin was also black as coal, and his eyes were a piercing yellow. He viciously smiled at me with his sharp, threatening teeth. I slowly walked backwards until my body hit the wall across the room. He didn't follow, nor did he move at all. The intruder stood there with his growling grin, taunting me with his presence. I wanted to scream for my parents, but was too terrified to make a sound. 3, 2, 1. Happy New Year, my family yelled from the other room. I slapped my palms over my face to cover my eyes, refusing to look at the being any longer. If he started to approach me, I wouldn't know what to do. I had nowhere to hide, so I just covered my eyes and prayed through it, whatever was going to happen. I heard footsteps advancing towards me, and as I heard the creaking of the bathroom door, swinging open, I screamed. Jared, my mother shouted as she entered the room. Honey, what are you doing in here? I hesitantly opened my eyes and saw her standing in the doorway with a look of concern. I scanned the room, expecting the man to still be there, but he was gone. Are you okay? She asked me again. I ran out of the bathroom and threw myself onto the couch beside my father, hiding underneath a blanket. Though I should have informed my parents about what I'd seen, I didn't. I remained mute for the remainder of the evening and barely talked for the following few days. I was scared that no one would believe me, but I was even more startled by the fact that that being existed and was in our home. I met my wife Rachel in my early 20s. We instantly connected, and I knew something was special about our bond from the start, something I couldn't pinpoint. While lying in the bed together one night, we opened up about our past and allowed ourselves to be more vulnerable than ever. While doing this, I warned her that she might find me crazy for what I was about to share, then explained my encounter about the strange man in the bathroom on New Year's. She shot up in bed and stared at me as I described his appearance in great detail. "I know it sounds crazy," I began to say. She instantly interrupted me by saying, "I'm not crazy, but something else about the story is. It's the fact that she saw the same man in her parents' house on New Year's Eve when she was 6 years old. I'm 3 years older than Rachel, and I was 9 when I saw that thing. According to that simple math, Rachel and I saw the same man on the same night. She lived in Nebraska at the time, and I was in Mississippi. Somehow this entity revealed itself to us on the same evening while we were across the country from one another. Again, I could tell there was something special about our connection, but I never could have guessed that this would be it."
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Dark FM Radio. Credit our source for these stories, Unexplainable Happenings, Chilling True Stories, by Tom Lyons and Autumn Barnes. You can find that on Kindle. Be sure to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. It truly does help us. Thank you again for tuning in to Dark FM Radio. Good night.